morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program which is aired each weekday on behalf of those of you who have come to realize, or at least open to the realization, that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us, toll-free, 877-300-7645. We told a sad story yesterday, one that is consistent with the criminal nature of Islam. Now, keep in mind that it was IQ Al-Rasuli on this program that correctly identified Islam as a criminal enterprise. It was founded as a criminal enterprise. In fact, there isn't a Quran scholar or a theologian in the world who can disprove the conclusion that Islam was created as a criminal enterprise. That is a statement of fact. It is irrefutable. It is emblazoned in the hadith, the most credible of all hadith, those hadith that explain the circumstances of the 8th surah, and it is all confirmed in the 8th surah of the Quran, that Muhammad began Islam with his first official act in the Islamic era after declaring war on all humankind, of announcing that he was engaged in a criminal enterprise for the sole purpose of robbing others of their possessions, of killing, of kidnapping, and of enslaving. These are statements of fact. So we should not be surprised that in Pakistan, the land of pure Islam, that we witness hellish, grotesquely immoral, perverted criminal activity. And the story we told yesterday was of young boys being kidnapped from their home, being sodomized, being filmed, being blackmailed, and their parents even being blackmailed, and of the police protecting the Islamic thugs that are perpetrating these hellish acts as opposed to protecting the children who are being abused by the hundreds, if not thousands, throughout this Islamic country. Here's a follow-up article. Parents at the center of the growing child abuse scandal in Pakistan accused police Monday of failing to do anything to break up the pedophile ring. Villagers in the central Punjabi of the Walla told Reuters of a prominent family there that has for years forced children to perform sex acts on video. This is not a manner of people being impoverished and impoverished people doing desperate things, including kidnapping, enslaving, and sodomizing children for the purpose of their warped pleasure and blackmail. No. The dominant family behind all of this is wealthy. They're religiously and politically connected. They are the best of Pakistan and Islam, not its worst. And they're the ones who are most responsible for what is occurring. And they can buy any Pakistani judicial official, police officer, or politician they wish, as well as any imam. Ravina Bibi says that her 13-year-old son was a victim. But when she tried to file a report at the Walla police station a month and a half ago, the police station clerk told me to get lost, and I was thrown out. Imagine that. Your son has been sodomized. He was kidnapped. He was tortured. He was raped. He was filmed in the act of doing these things, having these things done to him. You have the video evidence that shows the perpetrators and the crimes. Crime in any civilized country to abuse in a homosexual way a child in this manner, and to film the act and to publish the act and then to blackmail the child. And you have absolute proof that all of this occurs, and you go to the police and they say, go away, and they throw you out of the police station. Why? Because everything in Pakistan is in harmony with Islam, and Islam is in total disharmony with everything moral. My son is in the videos. He's the victim. She said, our children were forced into this. They were humiliated. But the police are treating them as if they were the criminals. There's a reason for that. And if the person who wrote this article took a moment to study the Quran and the Hadith, Sharia law, which is based on the two, they would know conclusively that in Islam, it's the victim of sexual abuse. It's the woman or child who is raped, the boy who is sodomized, that is the one that faces punishment and will be stoned, typically to death. And if the judicial forces, if the police and criminal justice system, corrupt as it is in these Islamic countries, do not whip her to death, stone her to death, hang her, or in the case, little boys, then the families of the victims will do those very things to their own children. That's how perverted Islam is. You know, I did a program the other day that's now on, been posted as a video on a number of sites around the world, some of them the most credible research sites in the world, where I said, you know, the problem isn't hate speech. It's that we don't hate enough. And I want to reemphasize that. If you do not hate the kidnap and rape of little boys, the videotaping of the perverted sexual assault on children, and the blackmailing of those children, if you do not hate that kind of behavior, and hate the fact that it's institutionalized, that the most prominent religious and political families are behind it, and that the police are in concert with it, and that the judicial system allows it, and that the victims of those crimes are the ones who are punished for the abuse that was done to them. If you do not despise those things, if you do not hate the religious, political doctrine that enables these kinds of crimes to become commonplace, then you're immoral. Our problem isn't that we hate too much. It's that we don't hate enough. We need to learn to hate that which is evil. We need to show that we have a conscience. We need to understand the root cause of this kind of hellish behavior against women and children. We need to understand the motivation and the justification of Boko Haram as they kidnap and gang rape little girls. We need to understand the mentality, the religion behind the Islamic State when they kidnap, enslave, and rape little girls, selling them as prizes to those who are the best jihadists or who can recite the Quran the most accurately and most completely. If you do not hate the justification for these things, the dogma that inspires this kind of perverted behavior against those who are the most defenseless, then you're grotesquely immoral. You don't have a conscience. You're incapable of making good moral judgments. It's those who speak on behalf of these things and the religion that inspires them because it is politically correct to do so who are incorrect. We've created such a perverse society that it is considered more enlightened, more compassionate, to deliberately and knowingly lie on behalf of religions that permeate all manner of hellish behavior than it is to tell the truth. Our problem isn't that we hate. The problem is that we don't hate enough. If you do not hate what is happening in Pakistan, in Syria, in Iraq, throughout Nigeria, in Egypt, Tunisia, in Libya. If you do not hate what is happening in those places because of Islam, then you are immoral. And I would go far as to say that if you are in politics or the media and you are not holding the cause culpable, which is Muhammad, if you are not holding the cause culpable, then you're not only immoral, you're aiding and abetting pedophilia. You're aiding and abetting kidnap. You're aiding and abetting the sexual slave trade. You need to wear that badge if you are politically correct. And you need to wonder what happened to you along the way if you've grown to the point that you don't hate the doctrines that cause such behavior. Now, are there pedophiles and rapists and slave traders and kidnappers and mass murderers outside of Islam? Absolutely. But is Islam disproportionately responsible for these things? Undeniably. But it's beyond that, folks. It's not just that Islam is responsible for 99% of terrorist acts, for 99% of the sexual trade of and enslavement of little children. It's not just that Islam has a virtual monopoly on these things. It's that the religion condones it. And that when you are in an Islamic country, everything works against the victim and on behalf of the perpetrators. That's the problem. It isn't that, for example, to switch religions for a moment, that the Roman Catholic Church has a severe problem with pedophilia and the abuse of children. It does, and it's overwhelming, and it's undeniable. It's that the church deliberately covered it up, that the church did everything they could to protect itself and the perpetrators at the consequence of the victims. It's that culture that we should hate on behalf of those who have been victimized and to keep others from being victimized. Yes, folks, the problem is we don't hate enough. Political correctness has robbed a generation of the ability to exercise good judgment and to be moral. They have made it a crime to speak hatefully. And yet, it is this lack of hating that has caused so much of the problems that so many who are defenseless are enduring today. Thousands of little boys who are being kidnapped, sodomized, and blackmailed in Pakistan. Thousands of little girls who are being kidnapped, enslaved, and raped in Nigeria. Millions of little girls who are undergoing sexual genital mutilation at the hands of their mothers throughout the world of Islam. Countless beheadings, crucifixions, and 99% of the world's terrorist acts perpetrated by this singular religion. All because Muhammad did all of these things. He was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He was a mass murderer. He was a terrorist. These facts are undeniable. They're irrefutable. And the religion whose laws are based entirely on his words and deeds is therefore the motivation for kidnap, for the enslavement of children, for perverted sexual acts being perpetrated on little boys and little girls, with the victims being the ones who are punished and the victimizers vindicated. Collectively throughout that society, all because of the perversion that is Islam. And it's our inability to despise this religion, to expose it, to condemn it, to speak honestly about it because of political correctness that is enabling Muslims to kidnap little children, to enslave them, to rape them, to torture them, and to kill so many. If you aren't capable of hating that, if you don't hate that, then you're immoral. You've lost your ability to be judgmental. It sounds counterintuitive because of the way we've been indoctrinated. But the problem isn't hate. It's that we don't hate enough. There's a reason that Yahweh, the God who revealed the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the creator of the universe, expresses rage. There's a reason that he says he's jealous. There's a reason that he hates. It's because he's moral. And it's right. If you don't hate those things that are harmful to those who cannot protect themselves and that are condoned by society, then you're not capable of love. Returning to this story, this woman said, and I want to repeat this last statement and then go on to the next, my son is in the videos. He's a victim. Our children were forced into this. They were humiliated. And the police are treating them like criminals. Another mother, Bibi, added, I went to the police station to file a complaint, but instead of registering a report, they took my son into custody. Her 15-year-old son is still in a Pakistani jail. He was kidnapped from his home. He was sodomized on videotape. He was then blackmailed, told that if he didn't steal money for them, if he didn't continue to perform perverted sexual acts on their behalf, that they would release the video and embarrass him. And not just embarrass him because he is the victim of unmarried sex and homosexual sex in an Islamic country. He's the one that will not only be jailed, but whipped, stoned, convicted. This is the way that Muhammad acted. This is a legacy of his creation of Islam. This is condoned in the Quran. It is the basis of the Hadith and Sharia law. We need to be honest. We need to be truthful. We need to be moral. We need to be enraged. This kind of disgusting behavior is not only happening, but it is being condoned by our politicians, that the religion is being exonerated that causes these things in the media. We need to learn to hate for the good of our children. As the 15-year-old victim of pedophilic sexual abuse is tormented in jail, the government is contemplating a inquiry. The inquiry is going to be headed by Prime Minister Norwich Sharif's brother. The scandal could engulf the entire government because it is certain, if it is an open and honest investigation, that police and judicial complicity will be found. The Independent Human Rights Commission of Pakistan issued a statement saying that the attempts to suppress and twist information, and there have been many, should also be condemned and must be probed. It's a very murky situation, said the human rights activist. He added that in the cases, including the children that have already been registered, there has been nothing done. Activist Ghaznavi said many children were abused, and that he himself had over 130 videos showing this abuse on camera. But people are afraid. They're being threatened. They're being intimidated. It's the nature of the religion. Understand, there is no separating of justice, policing, politics, religion, societal norms, behavior in Pakistan from Islam. Islam is the common denominator of everything that occurs in Pakistan. One day, some women in the village showed me these videos. My son was in one of them. That day, my world collapsed. Kids were being intimidated in these videos with weapons. They were drugged. Kids as many as 5 years old. 5 years old were made to perform oral sex. 5 years old. Homosexual, oral sex. And the victims are the ones who are sent to jail. In one clip seen by Reuters, a boy cowers and cries before putting his hands over the camera lens. In another, a groggy boy is beaten, tormented, tortured, and abused as a man tells him, "I will not stop raping you until you smile." What's it going to take to cause you to hate? Three 15-year-old boys told Reuters they were abused for many years. Two said they were threatened with weapons that included a knife, an axe, and a gun. "He threatened me if I did not compromise. He said he would kill me on the spot." One 18-year-old told Reuters that he had been abused since he was 10. The perpetrators, the Muslims conducting this behavior, are sodomizing little boys for 8 years for their own warped and perverted pleasure. It's a religion that it gives no one a reason to live. Its entire morality is upside down. What is good is bad. What is bad is good. Why is it that the world does not collectively expose and condemn the religion that inspires and condones such acts? The 18-year-old who said that he had been abused since he was 10 years old had to, because he was blackmailed, steal cash and jewelry from his family after the abusers blackmailed him. They're not just sexually perverted. They're thieves. They're blackmailers. They're kidnappers. They're pedophiles. Doing so in a society whose religion condones these behaviors. Stealing is lawful and good, according to the 8th Surah of the Quran. Muslims are inspired to kill, according to the Quran. Rape, which is sex with slaves, is expressly authorized in the Quran. Muhammad was a pedophile. Muhammad was a rapist. Muhammad was a mass murderer. Muhammad was a thief. Which is why these behaviors are considered good and why we ought to hate the religion that has inverted morality. I was going to school one day when these boys picked me up and they beat me. They beat me badly. Then they drugged me. And when I woke up, they showed me these videos that they had made of me committing these sexual acts. They told me that they would bury me alive if I told anyone. I've thought about killing myself every day since. How many stories like this? Like the stories of the two little girls that were gang raped, left naked, thirsty, near death, tied to a tree. One died, the other survived. In Nigeria, after Boko Haram kidnapped 350 little girls, turned them into sex slaves. How many stories like that do you have to hear? How many stories where the Zoroastrian families in Syria have their little daughters taken from their homes, enslaved, auctioned off as slaves, turned into sexual toys to reward jihadists. How many stories do you have to hear like that? How many beheadings do you have to see? How many crucifixions? How many terrorist acts where the terrorist shouts Allahu Akbar do you have to witness? How much of a monopoly does Islam have to have on terrorism? Because it's 99.9% today. Before you will hold the religion accountable. Are you capable of it? Are you capable of hating that which is so grotesquely perverted, so criminal, so deadly, so destructive, inspiring, not just failing to condemn these acts, inspiring them, condoning them, justifying them? What will it take for you to do the right thing? For us as a society to change and to stop being politically correct and for one time in our lives being actually correct? When will we begin to hate and to speak hatefully of institutions which perpetrate such heinous behavior? And make no mistake, Islam at its core, in the Quran, in the Hadith, with the words and deeds of its lone founder, Muhammad, is grotesquely perverted, destructive, deadly, counterproductive, deceitful. Everything that we should hate, including the condoning of the slave trade, of kidnapping, of ransom, of mass murder, of torture, of decapitation, of crucifixion, of mutilation, of rape and pedophilia. All of those things are not only condoned, but represent the very behavior that is considered perfect, the behavior of Muhammad. That Muslims from Boko Haram to the Islamic State emulate every day. It's time we care. It's time we hate. And if we don't learn to hate, then this hateful religion will continue to prey upon the defenseless women and children throughout this world. Turning to a country not far away from all of this, a little strip of land in the midst of this pervasive hell, we find that there is an archaeological expedition that has discovered the entrance gate to the scriptural city, the city that is found in the writings, particularly those ascribed to Dode's time, King Shaul of Gath, of the Philistines. You know, the reason this is important is that Gath was the home of Goliath. It's one of the more detailed stories in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, this being recounted in the book of Samuel. Samuel, listen to him, is what his name means. It is a amazing story. The whole Israeli fascination with having a government, having a politician, having a king, having a political leader like the Gentile nations. And Yahweh telling them, don't do that. It's the last thing you want. You know, live based upon the guidance that I have provided you in my Torah. Let me take care of you. Let me protect you. Let me care for you as my children. Listen to what I have to say. You don't want a political institution. You don't want a king. You don't want a political leader. Because if you empower a political leader, if you choose to be political And then you list all of the hellish things that politicians will do to them. Establishing militaries, taking their sons, sending their sons off to die. Justifying the stealing and the confiscation of their property. Imposing conditions that rob them of their freedom. Lying to them. Propaganda, we call it patriotism. To justify these confiscations of freedoms, of property, of lives. And Yahweh goes into explicit detail telling us why we ought not choose political leaders. And make no mistake, this was a choice that the Israelis wanted to make. And Yahweh said, don't do it. Don't choose politics, because if you do, here are the hellish consequences, the same consequences we witnessed throughout time. And of course, this man, his name was Shaul, the same name as the man that Yahweh called the plague of death, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, Shaul, who became Paul. We'll return to the story in a moment. So the archaeological expedition discovered the entrance gate to the city of Gath of the Philistines, the city from which Goliath had come. And everything is exactly as the book of Samuel said it would be. The city is located exactly where Samuel said it was. The gate is exactly as he said it was. It is the city of Gath, exactly as he said it was. It was a Philistine city, exactly as he said it was. And the popular name there, the name that is inscribed on the walls of that city, is in fact Goliath. For those scholars who mock the Torah prophets and Psalms, saying it's all fables, chew on it. Take a bite of that stone that was unearthed to demonstrate that exactly what Yahweh said had occurred did occur. And then think about it for a while. This took place 3,000 years ago. 3,000 years ago. You know, in his Quran, Muhammad couldn't get the past right. He couldn't even get the past right when he was cited quotations from the Torah prophets and Psalms. He couldn't even remember what they said and twisted it. And yet, here is this lone historical document that has been found to be precisely accurate in everything that it has said historically. And they find the city of Gath and its gates and the name Goliath exactly where the book of Samuel says these things ought to be. And vital at the very time of David, of Dode. Now, that's not only important for credibility, but to bring our attention to what we have found to be one of the most important stories in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Kirk, you and I spent a number of shows specifically talking about the consequence of choosing political leadership, which is what is told. That's the purpose of this story, and are showing just how much misery King Saul, Shaul, brought the Israelis. And the consequence for all of us, and the direct ties into the author of half the Christian Testament, Paul.
Mm-hmm. And the backdrop to that was, as you were talking, I was thinking, now as we're about to continue our choice to have a king or to have a political ruler, and the voting, you're probably going to be down to Jeb Bush and Hillary.
Ooh.
Now, if it's Hillary, I want to point out that you've done massive numbers of stories where it's very easy to see her affiliations with the Saudis as well as the
Religion of Islam.
She is a huge
advocate of Islam.
And the Brotherhood, Egyptian Brotherhood.
Right.
You know,
and if Bernie Sanders, by the way, prevails, and he is the populist candidate, he's a communist.
Mm-hmm. But then I say, let's go back to Jeb Bush here.
Now, by the way, I don't use communist as a pejorative term. I'm not throwing it around like McCarthy, and that that you ought to despise him because of the communist. You know, I don't care what somebody's economic,
one, right?
But he is economically, he's a communist.
Yeah, that's it's exactly. And the Republican side, they're probably going to put up Jeb,
right,
which is the dynasty. But once again, I want to
from an extraordinarily corrupt and inept, destructive family.
Yes, but also let's because of today's stories, let's not forget that you did hours and hours and hours and hours of shows where he where he gave money to and supported the Catholic priest in South America.
Yes,
that brought us the big scandals of the Catholic, the pedophiles.
Yeah, Marcial Mercier.
Yeah, Marcial.
Yeah, the pedophile, drug abuser.
So besides everything that y'all just told you don't do this for,
mm-hmm,
let's look at the characters of these people that America's
right
about to select.
Right. Absolutely.
Tell me how God's going to bless America.
Yeah. I would like to us to also draw attention to what was the unique characteristic of Goliath that David Dode pointed out to demonstrate that he was in opposition to Yahweh.
He was uncircumcised.
What does Paul advocate?
Not to be circumcised.
He is the messenger of uncircumcision, isn't he?
Perfect.
By his own admission.
Indeed.
So based upon Yahweh's testimony, in this very story about Gaul and Goth and the Philistines and Goliath, that would demonstrate that the message of uncircumcision is in direct opposition to the Creator God of the universe.
Yes.
That's a bad position for you to be in if you're a Christian. We'll be back after the news and commercial break.